the more compact, lease the all-new, agile but beefy Ford Ranger. Both are ready to be driven home at the year's lowest lease rate. Summer may be drawing to a close, but the fun's just beginning. With the right Ford truck, there's nowhere you can't go. But it all ends soon, so hurry into your local Northwest Ford dealer today.
This is Sergeant Mike. If you're thinking of down...
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart, and Hunter's helping me out here until Dave Bourne can join us. And welcome to Newsmakers this beautiful Monday. We have a few things to talk about, so thanks for joining us for your New Year's Hour, because you know that this is the place in the Mid-Valley for local talk and local issues and places that you can weigh in on the issues that are important to you. If you'd like us to cover a topic or you want to join the conversation today, give us a call at 503-393-1430. 503-393-1430. We're going to be talking about, because it is that week, folks, that week before Labor Day weekend where everyone's thinking back to school and the teachers are back in their classrooms. We'll talk a little bit about education today. I've got a topic for you having to do with how many people are hired by the school district just to manage behavioral problems in the classroom. We're going to get to that a little bit later in the hour. To start the hour, though, let's jump in on what we were talking about on Friday, because I don't know that this could be any more important, folks. And if you missed the show on Friday or on Thursday, if you're new to Newsmakers, you're going to want to listen up. Our Salem. Our Salem is what they're titling it. Get used to the name. They're going to be talking about it for a while, but this is the effort to rewrite our master plan in the city of Salem. It's the master plan that guides policymakers and the staff in what directions they should go for decades to come, folks. And you know who's showing up? Activists are showing up. So be your own activist. If you're just a calm, pragmatic, I'd like the government to work logically and at the will of the people and what makes the community better, then show up. Our Salem. So we're talking to the mayor last week, and nothing they didn't say on the air, really, but it was apparent in the subtext that the people that are showing up have one and only one issue, and that's global warming. Personally, I don't mind them talking about global warming. Come and talk about global warming. I don't mind the city having environmental policies that minimize its carbon footprint. I don't mind that. I do mind when all of our park systems, our transportation systems, all of our planning, long-term planning, and everything is governed by one public policy agenda in the nation, right? That's a problem, folks. Those of people who want more bike lanes, they show up and we get more bike lanes. People who want more sidewalks, they show up and they get more sidewalks. People who want LED lighting, people who want something to happen with your system having to do with solid waste and how we handle solid waste. I know Marion County does it for us, but it goes through the city as well in terms of all of these systems, folks, how we get our water, how we treat our water, how we treat our wastewater. Do you want every single decision made through a lens of global warming, or do you not? If you have a thought on that, give us a call on 503-393-1430. If you're not familiar, Salem does have a number of boards and commissions and advisory groups, and sometimes they're ad hoc. I mean, sometimes they're temporary. Sometimes they're special topics. But they invite the public to participate, and I don't know if it's a great thing or a scary thing, but they carry a lot of weight. They really do. You might have a neighborhood association, which in our city charter says that this is an advisory group to the city council. There may be 3.5 people showing up, and two of them are crazy and one's asleep. But their advice carries weight with the city council, and then they're setting public policy based on this, and whether or not you get a stop sign in your neighborhood, and whether or not your neighborhood park gets developed, and whether or not the church property gets a sign variance. All of these little things that affect you and your neighborhood and your families They go, a lot of them go through boards and commissions, neighborhood associations, and public input having to do with land use. And now there is no bigger topic in land use than the comprehensive plan, folks. Are we going to expand the urban growth boundary? Are we going to grow anywhere except South Salem and the West Salem Hills? Are we going to allow infill? What are we going to do about the transportation gridlock that is presented when we don't plan for transportation infrastructure, we don't have a third bridge, or we don't add any lanes? How are we going to modify, mitigate? How are we going to manage? Modify, mitigate, and manage. You got to like the alliteration, right? Increased density as Salem grows and adds another 50,000 people in the next 15 years. Just in Salem, folks. Doesn't include Kaiser. So our Salem. Our Oregon's a song. Pretty sure that's the state song. Our Salem. Look it up at cityofsalem.net. Search for it. Find out how you can provide public input. It can be as small as an email, folks, or it could be as large as dedicating yourself to attending all the planning meetings and the community outreach. But open your ears, open your eyes, pay attention, and please participate and let them know. So it's more of a broad look than a single focus of global crisis. Through global climate crisis. All right. We talked also a little bit about population growth, and I'm relying on you, newsmaker audience. I'm relying on you to make sure that the word gets spread about how practically the Salem has grown over the last 50 years, longer than most people in Salem have been alive. Salem's been growing at less than 2% a year. It's not, you know, just widespread growth. People tend to be anti-growth, and then they speak up and they try to make it harder and harder. And those are the same people that'll turn around and complain about the cost of housing. Well, and I said the same thing to the Speaker of the House. She spoke at a Home Builders Association of Marion and Polk Counties. They had an event and she spoke. And that was my question is, if you want the prices to come down for housing, can't we provide more of it? Can't you provide leadership into expanding the availability of housing? Because if there's a lot more of it and there's more available than there are people who want it, guess what happens to the prices, Tina Kotek? Guess what happened to the prices? They go down. Is that too logical for our leaders? Well, hell, we can't be seen as promoting, you know, growth or housing development, or even helping people in an economic sector, frankly, that our economy is so reliant upon. So growth, population growth is not overwhelmingly fast. As a matter of fact, it's been closer to 1% since 2011. Even as we come out of the recession, even as we're approaching 10 years of economic growth, we're still just crawling out in terms of the growth of individuals. So in our community, keep in mind, Oregon's growth and is going to be concentrated in Portland and the Willamette Valley, you know, the centers, the population centers, the Rogue Valley, course, Bend, and things like that. So when we're talking about population growth statewide, we're going to get a larger piece of that just naturally. And it's still not very big. Don't let anybody tell you we have urban sprawl in Salem. Doesn't exist. In Kaiser. Kaiser would like to sprawl a little bit. Their civic leaders are looking for space to expand. They would like more space for development, which has a higher base for property taxes, and they'd have nowhere to go, and they're going to end up either breaking away or having a struggle with the city of Salem when it comes to expanding the urban growth boundary. Frankly, there's just more urgency in the city of Kaiser. They do share the same boundary. There's so many boundaries, folks. It's just crazy. You've got city limits, you got urban growth boundary, you got a services boundary, and all these things. So Kaiser is a little bit landlocked, so they are looking to have ways that they can accommodate population growth. Are we going to accommodate population growth? Are we going to pretend it doesn't exist? Are we going to fight the tendency for anybody to have babies or to move here? We will see. Brent is predicting that we will see additional density, of course, but we're just going to have to, right? We're going to have to grow up vertically with more multi-story housing, especially multi-family, multi-store housing. And we're going to have to allow smaller lots, additional accessory dwelling units on a property that accommodate them, also known as mother-in-law quarters or whatever you want to call them, separate apartments on the side. I do have a story about that, but yeah, I got a story about that. Hmm. It's one where it's mandated. One of these regulations goes backwards. So we're going to take a quick break. Dave's going to join us. Come back. You're listening to Newsmakers, the place to be for local talk on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem. Welcome to Monday.
Welcome to Monday. It's going to be more draggy than usual for Dave Bourne because participated in Hood to Coast. You drove the van. How'd that go?
Granted, yes, I only drove the van, but yeah, I think if I counted all the cat naps and the 2 hours of sleep that we got in between a couple of the legs, yeah, maybe 3 hours of sleep over 30 hours.
Wow.
Because I got up at 4:30 on Friday morning, and we started at 9, and we ended around 4-something on Saturday afternoon at the beach.
It is unbelievable how many volunteers it takes to run a Hood
to
Coast.
I saw so many of my friends that were volunteering. It's crazy. Really? Yeah.
That is great. What a great experience. I did it a few times. And then tell me, since you just drove it, do they still have the critical, just massive gridlocks in a couple of the stops?
Yes, there's always that, and there's no way around it. Because between certain legs, as you head through the coast, on one of the highways, there's no other alternate for van one or two to go. So say van one's legs end, they're in the same traffic with van two as they're running their legs. So they're trying to get into the pit stops, you know, at the exchanges for their runners, and you're trying to just get through all of them as you go along. So there's about four or five of them.
After waiting through a few of those the last time, I decided, yeah, I don't need to do this again. I don't. There are other relays, and Hood to Coast is awesome. And if you haven't done it before, I would encourage it. But after having done a few of them and being in that traffic for so long.
Well, granted, they've worked out a lot of the kinks. There was the 1 year they had the anniversary where they added another 200 vans to the system. And and ODOT decided to close one of the exchanges because it was overloaded. Yeah, we sat on the road, Grant, on the road. We turned off our van for 6 hours, stopped, same place. Yes.
Oh, that's horrible. Anyway, I'm sure they were grateful. I'm glad everybody was safe and they had a good time.
And we did. We had a great time.
All right, let's get back to, we were talking before before the break about
our
housing.
Our Salem.
Housing, yeah, and planning for that and density. So there's a story coming out of East Bay in California. Where they mandated, this reminds me of the stories and coming out of Portland when they mandated some things having to do with multifamily. In single family neighborhoods, if you're going to develop one, you also have to provide basically rental space, you know, lower income or lower rentable properties.
Yeah.
In a
affordable housing is what they call it now.
Yeah. And it's, and it's for single family housing developments. So how do you do that? Well, the developers, what they did is they created additional square footage and called it a rental. It's on the same property as the house. It's a part of the same structure as the house.
Really?
But it could be rented out for your maid, right? Or for your butler or for your gardener or for your mother-in-law or for a student or something, whatever. Well, people bought the houses, they paid the price, and then they didn't rent them out.
I wouldn't either.
So my friend, it was just vacant. My friend that bought in that neighborhood, it was just vacant for a long time. And then eventually he bashed through the wall. So it was no longer a separate, because it was supposed to be a separate living area.
Okay.
It had to have a bathroom and a kitchen of some sort. So think in terms of basically a studio apartment, right?
Okay.
So you have cooking capacity and bathrooms. Well, eventually, after years of just being empty, he just bashed through the wall and just added the square foot to his house. I don't know if there's anybody in that neighborhood that actually used it as a rental, because then you're sharing the street or your driveway with a renter. I mean, the whole thing is awkward. Where
or
you're taking
your,
this,
or your mother-in-law,
or mother-in-law. That's, you know,
or
at least
father-in-law,
that's family, right?
Yeah,
but it's one of those. Okay, well, we need this, so we're going to jam this square peg into the round hole.
Yeah,
this is a single-family housing development, and we're going to mandate that you also construct rental property on the same lot.
That's
right?
Kind of weird.
It's either mandate it that way, or that was the solution that the developer
came up with. Yeah.
Anyway, funny story, you know. But does it help provide density? Does it help provide affordable housing, or is it just to raise the cost for everybody's single family housing in that area because you have to pay for the extra construction?
Wouldn't it be all right, or would you be okay with they developed a whole neighborhood of single family homes and put some duplexes and condos and apartments in there?
Yeah, I used to live until recently. That's where I lived, over down in South Salem by Sprague High School. I lived in a cul-de-sac with a single family home.
Mm-hmm.
And between the house and getting to Kubler, the main thoroughfare there, I mean, right down the street was apartments.
Man, there's
coexisted
no,
just
there's
fine.
There's no problem with that. And yeah. Why couldn't they make that the affordable housing?
Right. Yeah. And that's a zoning issue. And the question is, like we were talking about we have talked in the past about the regulation in Portland called inclusionary. And so if you're going to build multifamily, then you also need to build capacity for people to pay lower than average rents, right? To pay if you're on X percent of the federal poverty level and what you can afford and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And then, frankly, they just didn't do the economics. They didn't do the math, as we like to say here on Newsmakers. They didn't do the math. And so
I think they were probably using the new math.
Right. So the permits that were taken out the year after this was enacted, the permits that were taken out to build multifamily in Portland went down by 90%.
Well, do you blame them?
No. It's just like, so everybody went somewhere else to build them, or they just didn't build them because it doesn't pencil.
And then they created the housing crisis.
Right. And then they were like, well, what are we going to do about these high rents? What
How about we move the mandates?
All right, let's move on. A couple big things happening in Salem, a couple little things. NORPAC's bankruptcy is huge. Huge in terms of...
When was that announced?
Just last week. NORPAC has declared bankruptcy. However, they're still in operations. They believe that they have a deal to sell a good portion, if not all, of their operations to Oregon Potato Company. It's big news, folks. And not that long ago, NORPAC built a brand new headquarters, left Lake Oswego, where they had headquarters. They left some facilities in Staten area, and they consolidated everything there on Madrona, there near 25th Street. And in doing so, they also partnered with Henningsen Cold Storage, who built an adjacent, they literally share a wall,
mm-hmm.
where you can walk from, this is where we process the foods, and they can forklift it through to frozen storage.
That's brilliant.
Before it's shipped.
Yeah,
so it
that's
doesn't
brilliant.
Have, yeah, so it doesn't have to get shipped from the processor to the frozen storage
sure.
to wherever it goes. Very nice. Beautiful development.
Cost effective.
Changed a whole intersection plan.
Yeah.
Changed a whole transportation priority in 25th and Madrona. Can't say that I'm happy about it, but they created a need, and therefore the need was accommodated by the city to pull 18-wheelers in and out of there.
Okay.
So that they had the turning radius and the ability to get through that light.
So how come... Bankruptcy.
So
I'm confused.
I haven't dived deep into the economics, and I don't know that I will, but the model has not been working out. But the good news is, you know, you look at Oregon Potato Company and you look at Willamette Fruit, it seems like agribusiness is alive and well in the Mid-Valley.
Well, I would hope so.
And so maybe it's a new infusion of cash. Maybe it's new technology. Maybe it's different crops. Whatever it is, it's optimistic that the plants can stay open and people can stay employed and it'll have a new owner. But NORPAC, as we know it, is going away. And NORPAC, if you're not familiar, folks, NORPAC is a cooperative of dozens, if not scores, of farmers that own it, producers that own it, and they employ a lot of people in the Mid-Valley.
Yeah, a lot.
A lot of people. And not all of their assets are part of the deal, but hopefully there'll be some plan, and they're going to continue to operate. The news reports coming out of the Statesman Journal are saying that the farmers who are owed money for the crops that they grew will be paid and so forth. It's just a matter of making sure that they can put their debt aside a little bit while they reorganize.
So, interesting.
Yeah, they need to make sure that they don't get any huge bills due, presumably, and have to refinance when they can't. But buy them a little time to finish the growing season, finish the processing, and find a buyer. So we'll be talking about more as we get more details coming out of NORPAC and what their plans on why it actually happened.
Yeah,
if we're growing great crops, and they've been, and if you never toured the facility, folks, it's amazing. I mean, the crops come in, it's right out of our own area, right off the fields, and they're coming in, they're getting washed, and they have all these incredible food manufacturing tools, and all the vegetables get washed and cleaned and flash frozen if it's going to go the frozen
right.
And they bag them there, they seal the bags, they can them there, they do all of the, and they go into so many foods and so many brands that you buy on the store shelves. They go to restaurants, they go into the frozen food section at your local Roth's and all across the nation.
Yeah,
it's pretty amazing. All right, after the break, I'm going to get your take on this.
Okay.
I did have a conversation with somebody who works in the school district having to do with behavioral care.
And I heard you mention that.
Yeah. So get this, folks. 5 or 6 years ago, there was a cadre of about 8 individuals that helped with behavioral issues in the classroom in the district.
Okay.
So if little Dave is acting up in the classroom,
which I probably did occasionally,
emotional needs, a lot of times it's emotional health, it's mental health, it may sometimes physical health. But if there's an issue where there's behavioral care that's disruptive and or dangerous, there was a cadre of team to handle it. And that grew to about a dozen. And now we have the Student Success Act. And if you read it again, folks, there is a lot of reference to behavioral care. You know, issues in the classroom and who they're going to hire. We're going to start this fall, folks. We're going to start with 45 people in that role that 5 or 6 years ago we had 8.
Interesting.
Given that, we're going to take a break. This is Brent DeHart. I'm here with Dave Bourne, and you are listening to 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center. And it is definitely a Monday. Did you know it was going to be really, really hot in the next couple of days?
We
had a red flag warning up for the next couple of days.
We have had such mild summer, it seems like. I'd like to see the averages. It seems like there was more 75, 77-degree days than 87-degree days, right?
Normally, we have about 35 to 40 90-degree days in summer. We've only had like 22.
Wow. So I'm not wrong.
Almost half.
Much more. Well, yeah, much more mild. Yeah. Go figure. It's that climate change.
But you know it's
going to
be.
And it's the Chinese fault.
It's going to be warmer now in September and October. I can feel it.
I know. Hey, and folks, and Dave, everybody keep in mind how nice it is in September.
Yeah.
Even October.
Yeah.
Most Octobers, occasionally you get one that's kind of cold and wet, but most Octobers are beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, we still have clear skies and not a lot of rain yet. Days are getting shorter. Nights are cool, but you can still, I mean, it's still golf weather. It's still hike weather. October, I mean, so people laugh about the summer, but really, our summer does start late.
Yes.
I would say mid-June.
July 4th is when it starts.
And then, but
officially.
It runs, I mean, people started telling me summer's almost over like August 1st. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah,
we
not
just
even
got
close.
Into it.
Not even close.
September. So plan your outdoor activities. It's going to be spectacular.
The calendar may say fall September 21st.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't really happen until it flips the switch about October 15th.
You think that's it? October 15th.
I'm just going to pick that date.
All right.
Because by Halloween, it's cold.
Folks, you're listening to Newsmakers with Brent and Dave. We're talking about the school district and the behavioral care. Let me get a couple of the numbers right that I missed before the break. Team of 12 5 years ago.
Okay.
Grew to 16. So it grew by 25%, 33%. So grew from 12 to 16. And this fall, the same team that's handling behavioral issues is growing to 45. There's one going to be embedded in every single elementary school. Every
elementary school.
Yeah, full-time individual for behavioral assistance in every single elementary school.
I could see middle school and high school, but elementary school?
Oh, yeah. It's a huge deal. And it's a... and
wow.
This... and I spoke. We spoke to Rachel Alexander of the Salem Reporter last Friday. And I told her again off the air that please do a story about the explosion of private schools. And there's a reason why the private schools are exploding, and more people are bearing the cost to keep their kids out of public school, which is unfortunate in some regard. But this is one of them. In the classroom, there are behavioral issues that disrupt the classroom, and everybody suffers. We've talked about the policy of room clearing, which I learned a little bit more about. So these are kids who have had ACEs, acute childhood experiences, right?
Okay.
And so basically some sort of trauma in their lives. It could have come from abuse in the home, could have come from drug use in the home that led to abuse or neglect. It could have come from divorces and the emotional baggage that comes with that. At any rate, whatever it is, it's these this team of employees at the school districts. It's their job to create an intervention strategy and to train the staff. So this is the situation. We need an intervention strategy and how to handle this behavioral person or behavioral issues person. And is it emotional? Is it, are there triggers? And then how are we going to handle it? So we're going to have one of those in every single elementary school.
Wow.
Yeah. So... also interesting, and this is not that long ago, this was specifically for kids in special ed.
Right.
So this was a special ed classroom, and there weren't that many. And now they started opening up to general ed, and it's almost exclusively general education now. Right? And this is no longer the venue of a special ed classroom, folks. This is happening in your kid's second grade classroom. This is happening in your kid's third grade classroom or your elementary school where your kids go. And societal wise, I'm like, well, why is this happening? And I got to look, and this is a person that works in this role.
Okay.
Okay. No real answer to that. I mean, just like we all scratch our heads. Or why are things like this these days?
Maybe a conversation with your kid.
Yeah.
Ask them what's going on in their classroom that they would require this kind of behavioral assistant to be there.
Yeah.
In your school.
So of these people, 45 of them, 15 to 20 people will be brand new at the role.
Wow.
So they're not even experienced in dealing with these classroom disruptions. All right. So classroom disruptions. Let's paint a picture a little bit, folks. We're talking about somebody who might have a trigger, or maybe it's an emotional trigger, and they decide, I need to break something. And whatever's around them, they start to break. And then that puts the teacher and all of the other kids in a little bit of harm's way.
Yes.
So if they decide, I need to throw everything I can touch, they decide, I'm going to break everything that's glass. It doesn't matter if it's a classroom project, a classroom resource, somebody else's property. They're just going to go break it. Right? They're having a meltdown.
Okay.
And I'm far from an expert on what kind of emotional traumas cause these kinds of things, but this is not just somebody acting up. This is somebody that's had an ACE, one of those acute childhood experiences, and something triggers them and they cannot cope, right? I even heard some stories on the side, just anecdotal, about people not even going home because home is not safe and school is more safe. Right?
Their sanctuary?
There's some of these kids where the family unit has broken down.
Okay.
And they just don't want to go home. So they're loitering and they're lingering and they're staying. And that's all the more reason. You know, sometimes people think that the extracurricular in schools is extra and not necessary and it's fluff. Certainly if you compare us to, say, South Korea, right?
Yeah.
Where it's all academics all the time. In my visits, Korea, it was like, football games Friday night? What? No, we don't do athletics. You know, we take private lessons in, you know, fencing or soccer or language and arts and da-da-da, but we don't do extracurricular.
I think they do martial arts.
So for us, for us. Anyway, getting these kids who have traumatic households, and what are we going to do with them when that bleeds into the classroom and the teacher's ability to teach and all of our kids' ability to have a safe environment where they can learn. So it's a challenge.
And then their solution was, in that particular instance, clearing the room is probably the best. But in other ones where kids acting out and yelling to the teacher or attacks the teacher or something, clearing the room is not the solution. Take the child out.
Yeah, and I asked about that. And I said, well, why can't you take someone who's having an episode?
Right.
I don't know what else to call it.
Any kind of episode, yeah.
I assume you can't restrain them. She said, no, you can. But it's dangerous. It's dangerous to the behavioral specialist. It's dangerous to, you know, the coworkers. They had coworkers punched in the eye. We're talking during the break of was it a teacher or a school district employee had an arm broken?
Yeah.
And so there's two sides of this. Can we restrain them and remove them in the midst of this episode? And I get the overriding thing is empty the classroom of anybody who might be hurt, right?
Okay.
So I'm in my rational and not emotional brain go, well, why don't you empty the classroom of the person who's causing the disruption? But
yeah,
it's not just somebody yelling. It's not just somebody being rude and being disruptive with their voice. It could be very physical. So the two sides of it is get people out of harm's way. If they're picking up books and supplies and throwing them, they're picking up breakables and throwing them and bashing them and damaging them. Okay, you got to get people out of harm's way.
I get that.
And then the second side I had not considered was that kid's probably been abused.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And you, even if you are big and strong compared to the kid, it can be incredibly traumatizing for that person, for that young child to be restrained. Right?
Oh, yeah.
They're already triggered, and you're going to try to muscle them or manhandle them, and potentially they've been abused. So it can just redouble the trauma, right? Instead of, it's not going to calm them.
Right.
Right. So,
and then then there's the videotape of, you know, a teacher dragging a student down the hallway by their hair to the principal's office that made the news where she lost her job, but she was doing her job.
Yeah.
That child was just freaking out, and they had no recourse to get him to the principal.
God bless teachers. You know, I love you, teachers.
Their hands are kind of tied nowadays.
They are.
They can't discipline because, well, you just said, it could trigger an episode or double trigger them or who knows what. I mean, yeah.
A couple more points on the restraining and trying to clear the room of the person who has the behavioral episode.
That could traumatize the rest of the class too, though.
Exactly. How'd you read that through my notes, through a book?
I'm just reading your mind.
You're setting an example for the other kids of behavior and what it results in. So that's an issue that plays into how they're going to handle these things. And lastly, once the audience is gone, sometimes the behavior dissipates.
That would make sense.
Right?
Yeah.
So all of
but
those
what
things
about the
play
other
into
kids?
It.
They're all lined out in the hallway now?
Right. Right. What about all the other kids?
Yeah. What about the rest of the kids?
And the loss of the instruction time. What about the teacher who's being held to a standard and you say you must get your kids up to the standard, and then she loses her instructional time.
Right.
So we're losing instructional time because we're allowing people in our general education classroom who are not ready to learn, who are not there to learn, to take it away from everyone else.
Yeah.
I don't have an answer for that, folks, other than society's answer, as many people who can afford it, their answer is we're going to go to a private school.
Where you learn from Sister Rose and she walked around with a ruler.
Those were the old days. You're so old, Dave.
I know I am, but I'll tell you what, I've been to both public and private schools, and I'll tell you what, from public school to private school for a couple of years, and it was only a couple of years, but those were lasting impressions of rules and things that you followed, and that there are consequences to your actions.
Consequences to your actions. That's interesting. That's an interesting development. Maybe we should teach our kids that, right?
Yes.
So from the Montessori Discovery Center, you know, it wasn't that many years ago here in town. They have two campuses. They opened up, and those of you that have heard my interview with my wife, I know my wife works there, they opened up in elementary grades.
Right.
They were through kindergarten. And, well, they're full, folks. They're full. You know who else is full? Abacua's full. You know who else is full? Just about every private school, parochial and non-parochial, yeah. right? Church yeah. on the Hill has an elementary program, and you have, of course, you have Salem Academy and a lot of other. It's exploding.
Sometimes yeah. it's worth the cost to put structure in your child's life and to teach them there are consequences to their actions.
It's back. Yeah, it's back to school time. Maybe we should get our resident love and logic expert, Linda DeHart, in here to talk about.
I enjoyed the last time. I learned a lot from her.
All right, we're going to have to take a break. We got one more topic here today. Everything I know about child raising.
You just totally ignored me, but that's okay.
I'd already moved ahead, Dr. I always credit Linda. Everything I know about
that one just grazed you.
Kids, I learned from Linda. Miss Linda. All right, a couple more things on this, and then we're getting a couple more bits of news, and that'll be our news hour. But stick with us. I want to finish up with the why on this topic, the why this is happening. You're listening to Newsmakers with Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. I'm Brent DeHart, talking with Dave Bourne, and we've been talking about the behavioral disruptors in our public schools a little bit. There's different tiers. There's tier 1, 2, and 3 in terms of how bad are these disruptions and how bad are these behavioral issues. And these 45 individuals that have been hired for each elementary school to help staff deal with them and have strategic plans and training. They're only dealing with the tier 3s. Tier 3 might be somebody who just needs positive reinforcement, you know, a redirection, kind of like what you do with somebody who has Alzheimer's or something, kind mm-hmm. of positive redirection or reinforcements. But tier 3 is physical incidents. And these people are dealing with tier 3s, right?
Wait. You said tier 3 is what they're dealing with.
Physical incidents.
Okay.
Yeah, what and that's what they're dealing with.
One is positive reinforcement.
Yeah.
Was 2.
I don't know.
Somewhere in the middle. One's positive. 2 is discipline of some sort, maybe? And then 3 is physical outbursts.
Physical incidents.
Incidents. I'm sure.
Yeah, whatever that means.
So those people should be escorted out?
Well, that was the whole conversation.
To another classroom of some sort?
I'm not saying that.
No, but
we just got done spending 10 minutes about how sometimes it's safer to remove everyone else in the classroom, depending on the severity and all those factors that go into it, determine what the strategy is, because they're all different.
Yeah, of course.
They're all different, which is why those 15 to 20 people who are in this role in the school district this year that have never done it before. Right? They're just getting trained up. They don't have as much experience. They don't have any experience in how to deal with this. So every one of these you have to, you know, handle based on what are the kid's triggers, what he's capable of doing, history.
Yeah. They would have no idea what that is.
Which is why a couple of people who have been doing this for quite a while has been pulled aside to do the training. So be, in effect, be the coaches of the new people, since it's a massive expansion, folks. We're talking about going from 16 to 45.
Quite a bit.
Maybe not all this year. Maybe it's been ramping up, but just, you know, 5 years ago, they went to 16, and now it's 45 individuals. So back to the why. Why are we experiencing this, folks, in America, in the Wid Valley? Why are we experiencing this in our classroom? What is happening? I mean, we could all guess. We could all point the finger. You know, there's parenting issues.
Right.
There's lack of parenting issues. There's lack of a cohesive family unit. Maybe both parents work. Maybe one's incarcerated. Maybe one has substance abuse issues. Kids in foster care, moving around. They're not grounded. They don't have an emotional home base, right? They don't. And they're in foster care because of some of these other things, these acute childhood experiences.
And they're just angry at the world.
Could be extreme poverty. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you got kids coming to school in the same clothes that never get washed every single day because they don't have the money. They don't have either the person and or the money to buy them new clothes. and to keep them clean. You have homelessness. Some of these kids are coming in, and the family doesn't have a place to stay. And so all of these things are emotionally traumatizing, right?
Right.
You have domestic violence, and if you are witnessing domestic violence, that can scar you. The kids could have been victims themselves, and of course, drug use in the family. So all of those things are the why. My gosh, people, I don't have an answer to that, and I hope somebody does. I hope as a society we can ratchet back what's allowable, and when it comes to parenting, traumatizing and abusing your kids is not acceptable.
No.
But the
discipline once in a while, though.
The degrading of America's family unit has got to be a huge role in this. The statistics that we hear, if you're listening to some of the programs here on KYKN from Rush and so forth, I mean, the statistics about how many people are growing up without a father, how many people who are born with no father figure in the household and so forth. I don't know. I wouldn't be a sexist or anything. We were talking about the nonprofit, the mentoring programs having
right?
Valor Mentoring here in town. And that's a group of men who said, you know, it's not okay. We as men, we need to step up. And we interviewed the Valor Mentoring just a couple of weeks ago. And I applaud them for that. You know, let's see the problem, let's own it. But,
Well, every kid needs a support system of some sort, whether it be a mentor or a family member or a brother or sister.
Fascinating fact I learned from Miss Linda, right?
Yeah.
Kids feel safer when you with boundaries. Right. A lot of parents, you know, they don't want to be too strict, or they want to be the parents or the kid's friend, but they don't want to be too strict. And so there are no boundaries in the home. So she sees people coming into the classroom and they're unruly or what have you. Within a couple of weeks, everyone's in line. So parents will come in and say, wow, how do you have 20 people lined up with, you know, folded napkins and lunch boxes, and everyone's eating quietly and they're doing like, how do you do that? We can't even get little Johnny to sit down and eat his dinner, right?
Wow.
Well, you know why? Because they don't have a choice in the classroom. This is how we do things here. So, and what it does psychologically when you give boundaries is it comforts them, right? They know what the parameters are in life, right? And actually, psychologically, the child is comforted because they know somebody who's bigger than them as far as authority and knowledge. And someone they look up to, they've created a safe environment and said, these are your boundaries. And that is comforting. So that's security. It's not being overly strict, right? It's not being mean to your child. You're actually helping them maintain a calm psyche because they feel safe and protected.
Right.
Create the boundaries. Really interesting. Fortunately, I get to live with somebody who knows all this stuff and can fill my head.
We need to have her back on before school starts for her.
All right. We're going to get Miss Linda back on. All right. That's the end of the show. It happened so fast, folks. But let's do it again tomorrow. Maybe we'll talk to the mayor.
Maybe.
Maybe we'll. This is Brett.
Because I want to ask him about this new energy thing that they're doing.
Energy
City of Salem. Yeah.
And see what that ramifications are of that. Hey, folks, thanks for joining us. Stay tuned on KYKN and join us again tomorrow for Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, 1430 KYKN.
See you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.